And we're live with our 332nd episode of Absolute AppSec. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode. We are excited to be back. There's been a lot of discussion. There's been a lot that's happened over the last week, just in the industry in general. I feel like I say that every single week, but there is a reason that I say it. It is true. There's a reason that we record and that we have these discussions. Before we dive into the content, there are a couple of items. First of all, I did want to give a shout out to GuardSquare for sponsoring this episode. Think about your mobile app source code. Once it hits the app store, it's out in the wild, and without the right protection, decompiling is easy for malicious actors looking to steal your IP or tamper with your software. That's where GuardSquare comes in. GuardSquare provides the highest level of mobile app security for Android and iOS applications and SDKs. Their advanced tools integrate seamlessly into your CI/CD pipelines. We're talking polymorphic, multi-layered hardening techniques and automated runtime application self-protection, paired with mobile application security testing and real-time threat monitoring to deliver the highest level of mobile app security without compromise. Don't leave your hard work exposed. Secure your mobile applications today. Go to GuardSquare.com to learn more. Again, thanks to GuardSquare. Couldn't do this without them. Outside of that, we do have training opportunities that are coming up. We've had a couple of people reach out. We'll be hosting a Harnessing LLMs course here pretty quick. So Agentic AppSec, Harnessing LLMs, how to actually utilize LLMs for application security tasks. Watch training.absoluteappsec.com. Once we have dates nailed down, we'll let people know when that actually is. That will be an online version of the course. So it's instructor-led, but it is online. Besides that, there is Black Hat AI-enhanced. AI-enhanced application security. Sorry.
I was trying to remember how to actually the name.
The name, yeah. It's the AI-enhanced version. Yes, there is a Black Hat edition of our Harnessing LLMs course that goes into a few different topics that are Black Hat focused. That is December in Black Hat Europe. Check out blackhat.com. We will post the links for both of those along with the show notes today. Besides that, we do have a couple of different events that I know that we're going to. Ken and I will both be at SaintCon. Woohoo! Ken's finally going to make it out west, and it's going to be amazing. So we've got that coming up. That's the end of October. I do have B-Sides Cache Valley. That's a small local conference up in Logan, Utah, in September as well that I'll be at. Anything else on your, I think LastCon is still on your radar as well. That's the same week as SaintCon. So you're going to be doing some traveling, but it'll work.
Yeah, I think it's going to be SaintCon and then maybe LastCon. I don't know. It's going to be basically going to go from one to the other. So it should be. But they did give me, like, on the first day of LastCon, the first, not the keynote, but right after the keynote, that first slot. So that gives me a lot of flexibility. It's really nice that that worked out. But, yeah, I'm stoked. I'm stoked to be going to SaintCon. I want to see what all the hype's about. There's been a lot of hype.
I've talked about it for years, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Is there anything else that we need to bring up right now? Not necessarily. I know there's going to be more from a training perspective. You and I need to get back on that horse and figure out what's next as far as, you know, other conferences that we'll be at. I know, DEF CON Singapore is probably, you know, the next big one that's on there.
March for that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Mid-March. March timeframe. Yep. As long as we can make that trek across around the globe, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Seth, start training for it. Get.
I am. So we're all good.
Posterior chain strength that you can get, flexibility that you can get. You know when to Yeah. Anyways, it's a long, it's hard on the body. It's hard on the body. So it's a long flight. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that'll be, I don't know what else to talk about in terms of like events or anything. Cause I don't know, like things are kind of winding down, thankfully. Well, winding up before they wind down. There's, you know, three conferences at least before the end of the year. I've actually got like weird travel too. Cause like I've got a company summit. I've got a board meeting in New York. I've got a couple other trips. So I'm going to be definitely getting that ass, that, those miles in by the end of the year. So I'm stoked, to I don't know, kind of see maybe like a brief break. Typically January and February, you and I get a little break, where we don't have to do stuff. But yeah. Anyways, yep. I don't know what I'm blabbering about.
Cool.
What am I talking about?
That's nonsense. Fine.
I should right. tell everybody I am fighting a cold. I have not slept much. If I sound really dumb today or dumber than usual, that's why. I am genuinely struggling. But you know, we just keep going. So we're gonna do this.
All right. Well, okay, I'm posting the first link then. This caused quite a bit of stir in and conversation in Slack yesterday. And it's almost like we're prescient a little bit, right? Like we see this stuff coming, because how long have we been talking about the new AI DLC, right? Like it's been at least 6 months that it's come up on the podcast. And Claude is finally like diving in, at least from a blog perspective and a marketing perspective, about what an AI native SDLC looks like. I guess we should, you know, first of all, talk through what is actually in this article. And I know you've done a reading on it, but let's hold on. I'm going to actually show the screen here and we will. Because it is their blog about how to transform, you know, your software development lifecycle with AI, right? I go back 2 years or, you know, at least 6 months, 8 months, whatever it was, like as you started converting over to utilizing, and everyone did, right? Like utilizing Codex and Claude Code to actually like speed up their development lifecycle. And
the fall of 2025. Yeah. I think November, December, it really, really saw an uptick. Yeah.
Yep. And that's where we started to really use it. Even though like coding agents had been around for a long time. I mean, we talk about how we used GitHub Copilot for years and years and how helpful that was, but it was never the same level of it, kind of an autonomous agent that could go and complete a full task. You know, writing a function was one thing, but completing a full task. But what this has done is created a condition where the thing that we focus so much time and effort on, the code and actually writing the code, which took the longest, it was the longest task in the SDLC, is no longer the longest task, right? It's no longer the bottleneck for, you know, and I have to agree with this, right? Like this assumption or this assertion is that it doesn't actually, from a business perspective, generating the code was always the thing that took up the most resources. That's not the case anymore. It still does consume resources and it still takes a lot, but it means that we have to think about our SDLC in a different way. And you and I have talked about this a number of times since the fall of 2025, as to how that affects the SDLC and where security is actually injected into that pipeline. And that's not necessarily the point of this article, but it does affect security since code, whatever form that's coming in, is being generated so quickly. So before we get into any of the rest of it, thoughts there, agreements, disagreements. I don't think this was the main focus on in general during that whole Slack conversation, right? But
what was the main focus?
No, I don't think this was. I don't think sorry. The fact that code is no longer the is no longer the bottleneck in an SDLC. I don't think that was the main discussion point in Slack, right?
Or there wasn't an argument or a debate about it. You know, I think everybody.
Everybody kind of agrees. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, wouldn't expect anyone to push back too hard on that. You know, I feel like easy. I mean, you can literally like dictate your words without even typing and build an app from your phone, by the way. So I don't think anyone's gonna, at this point, reasonably question, you know, that it has become vastly, vastly easier. Is that a way to use English today, Seth? Fuck, man, my brain is just. Oh God, I'm so sorry, everybody. I'm just walking through mud mentally here. But no, nobody pushed back on that. I think that we're all in agreement. And I will say this right here, the last thing I'll add before I hand it back over to you is this thing on the left, plan, design, build, test, deploy, and maintain. I want to say that is still, I agree with that too. I also agree, like if we're just, you know, main stages of SDLC, sure. That's no pushback at all.
Yeah. And I mean, and to be fair, right, on Anthropic and Claude here, they're recognizing that that is what the SDLC actually looks like. They haven't tried to do a huge jump forward as far as the different stages that are associated with it. The one thing that I, you know, start to have heartburn with here is you can definitely tell that it's coming from Anthropic, because on the right side of this same graphic, you have Claude in the middle of everything. Right. Like, and of course, this is, I keep being very pessimistic about these AI companies on most of the marketing material and blog posts and research that comes out is how do we get people to spend more tokens? Right. Like, I'm very pessimistic as to what the purpose of these sorts of articles actually is, because it seems to be, hey, we're driving people to use our LLMs to actually do more and more, which from a business perspective makes sense, but it's not always the best use of money, tokens, time, whatever it is.
I'm like looking at what Bobby's saying too, which is, sorry, I'm going to briefly spin off of something because I like actually want to pull on this thread a little bit just for a second. So okay. he said, you know, code is no longer the bottleneck. Isn't that what they said when we built compilers back in the day? And I had kind of responded with like, managed memory languages that had syntactically easy to interpret specifications. Those in a way did actually create a world in which it was easier and quicker to develop applications. As I was saying that, I kind of realized like between cloud adoption and languages that focused on productivity, developer happiness, like converged, that's sort of where DevOps kind of emerged, which obviously played a big part in reshaping the SDLC. So him bringing that up and so some of those similarities really, really do. There's a lot of parallels there. That's what I'm trying to say. There's a lot of parallels there. A nice thing that Bobby said, because I really, that's an interesting way.
But so we're finally at that stage, right? Like this has always been the dream of low code platforms and business focused development platforms has been to reduce the amount of time it takes to create something useful, right? Like that's always been the, or to achieve some task. So as engineers, we've always had this structure that's built into generating those business-focused applications. But we've now taken away the highest cost portion of the SDLC. And if anything, we've talked about this in the past, we've reduced the SDLC to basically like come up with an idea, generate a prompt, and get output. Like have AI do some stuff and get output, which is not—it's not great from a security or an engineering or availability and you know everything else that goes into a well-designed product. But there are generators out there that'll do that for you now, and not even generators, right? You can go to there's a ton of low-code platforms that are using LLMs to accomplish specifically that. Now, it does seem like there is a bunch of backlash there, especially from a security perspective, especially from an availability and stability and everything else perspective, that people are realizing that it's not a panacea. But you're going to have accountants that go and create applications, right, using Claude. And whether or not you want to trust that is going to become another question. From a
want to trust?
Yeah. What? Yeah.
We don't do things we want here, all right? We do things we have to do here.
To do, yes. Yeah. And so I'm kind of like going off on that, right? Like it, you know, it's not just compilers, but this has been the dream, and this is what a lot of research institutions and a lot of companies that we, you know, you and I work with on a daily basis have tried for years to reduce the friction associated with an SDLC to something very simple so that they can create applications quickly. Now, yeah, I'm not saying that those are engineered well, right? Like if we don't follow some sort of a structure in designing those applications, they fall down, and that's the backlash, and that's what we're seeing. And I know you and I talked about this pre-podcast as well, that we're seeing people realize that they can't just go and roll something out quickly and have it accomplish the same tasks as someone who has been in the field for, you know, 10 to 20 years, right? Whether that's security, whether that's engineering, whatever it comes down to, expecting an LLM to have that expertise or to put that in place without being directed properly is a fool's errand currently, because it's not going to apply those principles unless you actually dictate to it how to apply those principles, right? I guess that's where I'm going with this. In general, overall, I guess that's my question. Let's back up a little bit. As far as this AI SDLC goes, what Claude and what Anthropic is proposing here, how do you feel about this SDLC and you know what they're proposing?
I mean, Anthropic. Okay, I have not been the kindest about Anthropic's marketing. They deserve it. I don't really care. It's fine. I honestly, their marketing has been heinous at times, downright irresponsible, I'd say. And I've spent, and many have spent a long time undoing some of the damage of that. Mm-hmm. However, I will say when this came out, I was actually really excited. And primarily because Cameron from the Coffee Chaos and ProdSec had shared this. And I'll read anything Cameron shares. You know, I'm a fan of fan of Cameron's work and musings. Anyways, so I saw he posted this, so I immediately dug in because I actually was pretty excited to see like what was their take on the AI SDLC, just because we are also working on, you know, what does that look like from what is the mature AI software security or secure software development lifecycle look like. So I was very actually excited to read this. And I think Ron had put it really succinctly, which was because I felt the same way. I was like, it was oddly shallow, but highly prescriptive. And I was like, what is happening here? So I kept reading. And by about 70% in, I was like, okay, I have enough data here to basically like, I'm upset actually. This was an opportunity for arguably the biggest influencer in software right now to give us a picture of how they see the world, like the software factory floor that everybody talks about. And we'll get to that because I know there's a lot of different opinions on that. But I was hoping to see what their vision for the future would look like, both in how that software factory floor moves, and then sort of how the different groups that are involved, you know, manage their end of the their end of it. And basically what this article is here's how to use Claude, and here's the like four different markdown files you should be updating and managing. And effectively what it came down to for security was, yeah, you should update some markdown files and you should run our security review tool and review the output of it. And that was like, I mean, that was just depressing. That was just depressing. I'm like, my God, I know how many things you can actually, and I have an article that I released today, which we'll maybe have time to touch on, maybe not. But my, in my article, I basically say like, hey, we have as defenders, all of this incredible information, whether that's institutional knowledge, whether that's, you know, the rough edges and some, previously like exploited parts of the application. That's not even institutional knowledge. This is documented somewhere, right? This is like, you've got a bug tracking system that tracks these things. There's all kinds of different, I mean, you know, the teams, you know, so many things you have access to, if you'd like to figure out every day what is changing inside of your organization. You should know every day what exactly is being developed. All of these things are possible. And there's many different points where a human needs to be involved to help manage these systems. But my God, to hear that their vision of the future was we modify markdown files and run their review tool, I was just, it's incredibly depressing. I was very, very disappointed by this article. I was really hoping for more. And I know it's a playbook. That's the one thing I will say. I understand it's a playbook. So the idea is that it's supposed to be sort of, it is supposed to be somewhat prescriptive, but this is just like, to me, honestly, Seth, this is just like a, this is a marketing ploy for more Claude usage and burning more tokens. It's not,
yeah,
it's read like any, like if an academic put this out, they would be flamed. Like I just don't sometimes understand. If you have all these resources, if you have all these intelligent people, if you have all this money, why was this the output? You know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
As I started reading through this, like I kind of came to that same conclusion, but my initial thought was, this is naive, right? Like in dealing with trying to get LLMs to do different tasks within the SDLC and even what you and I teach, right? And in the Harnessing LLMs course, in the Agentic AppSec course, is that it's just naive. Even things like, oh, you're just going to write to this markdown file every single time and commit it, and that's your audit trail. I was like, whoa, how is that helpful? Like, just this last week, I've struggled with agents doing that and using like shared notebooks and other things and just completely overriding each other and not adhering to prompts. And, you know, yes, okay, maybe the Anthropic models are a little bit better at following those instructions. But the second that you're depending on the model to tell itself or, you know, to keep track of what's actually happening without some sort of real like utility in place to make sure that it's happening correctly, it's a fool's errand again, right? Like, and maybe that's my, you know, my takeaway on a lot of this today, but it does feel like it's incredibly naive. And will it work in some cases? Yeah, it will, but it does feel like a first pass, right? It feels like, hey, this is the first time that we've really looked at this. And you know, we're going to try and push Claude into each portion of the SDLC here. And that's what you see, like skills and sub agents and evals and everything like that. And it all works. But the utilization of Markdown as the driver here is, it's just naive. It's right?
Brittle and naive. And this isn't something anybody would ever want to get audited on. I genuinely mean this. There are so many different ways, especially given AI. Like, it's funny to me that this is an AI company, and there are so many different ways that security, QA, SRE, engineering, not just them, I mean, product folks, right? GRC, like there's so many people that I would say go to market teams. I mean, there's everybody can benefit from introducing their own new things in an agentic way into the AI SDLC. I like, and to be clear, like it's going to have to happen. I mean, I don't see a world in which, you know, I think it's going to, yeah, you're going to have your, it's always been like this, right? In any industry, you've got your like bleeding edge folks, they're experimenting, they're still trying out the AI SDLC and what that looks like. And there is no accepted standard right now. There's no like anybody you can point to that just like universally figured it out yet, right? That can be replicated every, or like in most places, right? So there is no unified standard right now. There are people that are leading that pack. There are also the people that are trailing in that pack, as always. So when you look at the long tail to get everybody up to speed, that might take 5 to 10 years, we'll say. But yeah. I don't see a world past 5 to 10 years where we're still doing, like, I kind of see a world in which, you know, a user is sort of like, hey, I had a thought bubble. I had a feature I wanted. And they go and they talk to some system, and that system, you know, elevates their ticket. And maybe a human being needs to get involved and ask some further follow on or whatever, maybe not. And then from there, you know, you've got people managing those different specs that are coming in and prioritizing or not. Maybe they're just making sure that the system's prioritizing those things correctly, like meaning the feedback from users, the bug fixes, the feature requests, the whatever. And then from there, I see a whole bunch of points at which automation starts to kick in up until the point where it's post-deployment, maybe we're even from a security side doing some like agentic offensive attacking, I don't know, whatever, just all the way up until past deployed, right? And everywhere in there, there is a place when we talk about security for us to introduce something really, really cool. And again, mm-hmm. like I am working on something and James is working on something to be a little bit more prescriptive than what I'm saying now. It's a little hand wavy, but none of it is, hey, here's the Claude flow. Like, go ahead and make sure you keep, you like, here's the original specification intention inside of intent.md. Just make sure that was done. There's timestamps, security review tool ran, update anything you like feel like needs to be updated to make it a better scan the next time or whatever. It's like, dude, that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous for security. It's ridiculous for QA. It's missing the boat for everybody. It's, yeah.
And anyways. The other thing is cost, right? Like, you and I both know how much these frontier models cost. So running something like this in the CI/CD pipeline, right? Like when you don't have unlimited budget to spend on LLMs for code reviews and other things, it's just going to balloon over time. So doing this for every single process in your SDLC, adds up quickly, I guess is all I'm going to say there, right? Like there are other techniques that you can use. And sometimes we're introducing probabilism here where we don't necessarily need it to be completely honest, right? Like,
spent a whole article talking about why you need both. Exactly. Yeah. Like I'm with you, Matt. I just spent a bunch of time explaining why you need to remove probabilism, aka AI, whenever you can, for that reason. Yeah. Reliability for cost. If it's wrong in one place, it poisons everything downstream, et cetera, et cetera. Lots of reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, and to Bobby's point here, right, as well, we're probably more advanced than the audience they were targeting this at. Right. Like, you know, so if you're a, you know, engineering leadership, you're just dipping your toe in AI to use Claude, and you just partnered with Anthropic and they gave you a whole bunch of tokens, they now have a blog post that they can point at and say, this is what you should be doing. Right. Like, you know, this is the workflow that you should start with. And it will make Claude incredibly sticky in most of these organizations because they're going to, you know, oh, you've got to have the code review skill. You've got to have all this other stuff in place to actually track this. So Yeah. That's probably who they are targeting this at, which is probably why it's so disappointing to the rest of us that have been doing this for a while.
It's really looking forward to someone who is creating the stand, unintentionally helping to create standards. Creating a standard, like something that's actually usable. This is shit. I mean, I'll just call it. It's shit. I'm not going to like sugarcoat it. It is what it is. Like, it's not a good article. And I'm sorry to the person that wrote it if like that offends you, but this is not somebody who knows how SDLCs work. And well, I shouldn't say that because someone would be like, oh, I've got 30 years of, okay, I don't mean it like that. It reads like somebody who doesn't have like a lot of hands-on experience with the SDLC and very much loves Claude. That's what it seems like. Anyways, I don't know. I was just frustrated. It's another one of those damn frontier model companies reworking how software is done, but like not well. And I hate that they're the adults in the room because like, that's what I'm trying to say. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Like, if any other company that didn't create a magic box, which is how everybody seems to look at it, right? If they didn't create this magic box, everything else they say would be laughed at. Everything else they say would be considered just bullshit FUD, and everything they say would just be tossed out the window. But they created a magic box that's like really, really smart, right? And so then they get a lot of leeway, a lot of credibility attached to that name. And this is just another example of using it irresponsibly and squandering an opportunity to me.
So do you want to talk about the collective agreement as well then from the other large frontier model? I know
OpenAI. Can you explain what's going on with that? Because I've seen the letter. There's some kind of letter going around, and I briefly in a fever dream read it, but could you maybe let's give a background on that.
Yeah. So they came out with this, I guess this was also within the last week and a half, 2 weeks, right? Like, and this is the logo wall, to Bobby's point, right? Of all the companies that are going to, let me actually share that too. A collective call for cyber defense, right? This is putting the onus. What? Oh, did we both share it at the same time? Okay, you did.
No, I did not share it. I said I read it. Sorry.
Okay. So if you've read it, then like you probably have a good idea on what's going on here. But it's basically saying that companies are responsible for strengthening their cyber defenses against AI-enabled cyber attacks. And you should be on board with protecting your clients and your company by enhancing your security, right? That we're going to empower defenders, right, with cyber-capable AI. In general, my takeaway here is that OpenAI is pushing, well, number one, it's their like agenda of like, hey, we're security conscious, right? Like is what they're pushing. We're getting organizations to sign up. But the overall responsibility of protection and actual like security reasoning is being pushed on those that are utilizing OpenAI, but it's not OpenAI's responsibility to actually do this. I don't know if this is in, well, I don't know attribution-wise if this is in direct response to the Hugging Face incident, but it sure feels like that. That they are pointing the finger at other organizations for not developing secure code when their models are the ones that are in fact being utilized to exploit and find the security flaws in those code bases themselves. Doesn't mean that that's not a good way to go about it, but the fact that they're calling on every organization here to do this without, I don't know, token spend or some sort of actual support behind it, feels a little disingenuous, I guess, is where I'm going with it. Of course, like everybody's throwing their logo up there, you know, hey, we're a part of securing the internet, but this really doesn't mean a lot.
Fuck, does this work for? Can I ask that question? Who is this made for? What is this made for? And I don't mean this like I will say this, you and I have like a really good friend, and they're like, I know people at OpenAI. I'll say that we have mutual friends who we are connected to who even do the marketing at OpenAI. So I mean, maybe I'll just ask them directly, like back channel, like who is this made for? Like, who is this made for? I don't even know why these, I guess I'm dumb because I'm like, surely there's a good business reason to do this. I don't know. You wouldn't do it otherwise, right? I get why the signatories, now to be clear, I understand why the signatories did it. But I was like, why, what does OpenAI have to, I guess like that's also like a weird screwed up way that I look at the world now. It's like, when I read things, it's sort of like kind of some filters that they have. And I'm sure you're the same way. I mean, we've read so many articles, we've done this podcast for so long. How can you not sit there and like have a bunch of different filters? Like, what's the intention of the person that's writing it? You know, like, what do they gain from writing this thing? But I'm genuinely curious. What do you think is like something like this?
Yeah. From my pessimistic perspective here again, it's about how do we get companies, security companies, governments to actually use our AI, you know, models to perform security tasks, number one. Number two, how do we build a moat around that so they only come to us for security tasks, right? So this like call to frontier AI companies to be like, hey, you know, if anybody's going to use you for security, they need to like register and they need to do all these things. Like open source models are bad, basically, and you shouldn't be using those. You should be using us because we're above board and we,
There it is. Okay, I gotcha. Don't use open weight models. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. That feels like it's a two-prong attack against open source, open weight models, and how do we raise our marketing, you know, efforts around security so we're the ones that get associated with doing security work.
Okay. Was this before, did this come out before or after the NVIDIA having like announced they acquired Hugging Face?
I think it was after. No, because that's new too. I think this was before, right?
But they all know what's going on behind the scenes, like something like an NVIDIA.
They're all invested in each other. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. For that amount of money, like there's no chance in hell people didn't know that NVIDIA / Hugging Face merger was happening. Interesting. Interesting offensive on the open weight models. I don't know. Something's percolating. This is fun to watch, though. I will say these guys, like, just on a personal level, this market has been incredibly weird because, like, you know the story of Dry Run. We built something super interesting and unique, but it's hard to differentiate when everybody claims to do the same thing. Then these model companies came out and they did their marketing, and that completely caused like a ton of heartburn for me. So yes, sorry if I love watching them fight amongst themselves and all the drama. I love it. I love it. It's amazing. Just give me popcorn, nice blanket.
And apparently though, Dario is actually watching our stream right now. So yeah, like that's good as well. Whoever just came in with that troll. I gotcha.
Yes. Here we all just agree. Regular. Absolutely. Did you put that up on the screen? Yeah, that's awesome.
I did, yeah.
Regulated American muscle models. That's amazing. Oh,
yeah. Okay.
This is at least fun to watch them sort of, you know, cannibalize themselves and their other It's great. It's great. I love watching it all happen. It's just terrifying that, you know, our entire economy basically is sunk into this shit show right now. But and waving that away. Yeah, it's been that article. Let's bring it back to that article. I'll just say, like, we talked about it. Everybody gave their opinions and thoughts in Slack. It's a really good conversation. Definitely, you should go check that out if you have never joined our Slack. You could always, by the way, I should actually mention this. We know that the invite on the site doesn't work. We had, unfortunately, we had some naughty script kiddie people messing with our Slack instance. So we had to disable that. So if you ever want to join our Slack community, and I think that you will want to, there's so many smart people on there that can answer whatever question you have, just email info@absoluteabsec.com. Again, that's info@absoluteabsec.com. Seth and I will see that and send out some invites and yeah, frequently. So
cool.
Yeah.
Now, so getting back to it, let's see. Do you want to talk about your Mythos Ready, or should we talk about Rumor is the Exploit? Which one of those do you want to dive into? We got about, you know, 10, 15 minutes left today.
Actually, then I'll save the Mythos Ready. So I'll just say this. I'll just tease it, and then we can send it out as part of the digest and the newsletter. There's been chatter about, you know, I think everybody's like, what the heck does Mythos Ready? And me especially, who has to sell, you know, I get these calls and everyone's like, we got to be Mythos Ready. You got to be Mythos Ready. And I'm like, what does that mean to you? What does that mean to you? And it means something different. And then CSA had tried to define it. And then once I compiled all of different, everybody's like, what they felt that meant, what CSA meant, felt that meant. And I say CSA, it's actually like the OWASP Gen AI project people, unprompted folks, different security leaders, like a lot of people involved. Then it was sort of like, it was a realization that Mythos is just not, it's not trying to be Mythos, ready in the way that I'm seeing it defined is actually like a pretty low bar, and there's a higher bar. And that's what the article talks about. So we'll send that out. We'll get that out to everybody, and we can maybe even talk about it the next time we roll on. But we've got a different article, which I was hoping you could tell everybody about while I post the link for it.
Oh,
you already did.
I just dropped it. Yep. I just dropped it in there. This goes back to, let's see, the dispute. Yep. Okay. Share that one now. So, the title of this article is Rumor is the Exploit. And, or just a rumor of a bug is enough to find a security exploit these days. This does touch a little bit on what it means to be, you know, or what people are interpreting to be Mythos Ready. But it no longer takes even a patch to lead to a security exploit. And if you follow, you know, the NetSec subreddit or, you know, Lobsters or any, you know, any kind of like CVE list that is tracking exploits and tracking CVEs and tracking security research, there has been a marked uptick in the last 12 months in the number of findings, the number of successful exploits across multiple products, and everything, a long tail of software that was never examined before the advent of AI and the ability to use AI to uncover these things, that has led directly to this explosion, right? Like we've talked about the Vulnpocalypse a number of times. But the argument here from Anil, and this is, you know, this is good research. He's talking about a bug that he just fixed, but he kind of backs his way into this idea that it doesn't even take a patch anymore. It just has to, you know, just the rumor of a bug within a product is all that these agentic exploit systems need to actually go after and identify bugs in them. If you're following any researchers on LinkedIn or X or social media nowadays, they have built harnesses to go after large products and large companies that are being released daily to actually identify these bugs and turn them into security exploits. So just a rumor of a bug existing in one of these platforms is enough to send those agentic systems at those platforms and identify those bugs. And yep. he talks through what it is that he actually identified and saying, okay, he doesn't have access to Glasswing, but DeepSeek vPro or V4 Pro was enough to actually turn up and find this flaw in CoHTTP, you know, part of OCaml. And that's...
Yeah, but it's not American.
Oh, yeah. So it could actually find it. It's not a real model. Yeah, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Why not? But that's the argument that he's making now, is that... finding an exploit, right? Or finding a bug now leads to an exploit, where in the past we didn't have the research or the eyes to actually go after every single one of those bugs as they popped up.
Well, I mean, it's like, if I tell you that I think that there's a, or yeah, if I say to you, Seth, hey man, like I think that in this, I think this Java Spring application that they messed up something in their config, and because of that, there's an RC. Maybe I even give you a portion of the application, maybe I don't. Maybe I just say like, there's an RC in a non-authenticated page. Well, it's not actually that hard for you to go back if you know that. Like, it's just a weird mental thing. Like, if you know there's relatively something wrong and you relatively know where that's at, like I feel like given what you, your experience, your time to investigate, you know, your knowledge, you'll be able to figure it out. So why is that any different? Like artificial intelligence, it's like, it's not, it's the same thing. And it doesn't matter if you use like a frontier model or if you use a DeepSeek. This is where we're at. This is why I argue in that article, which again, I'll keep teasing it, but I keep saying like, no, like if you're like reaching to get to the level where like you have meet those level capabilities internally, like you're, first of all, you're already late. Second of all, you're like behind the curve and you're just meeting the bare minimum. You're a defender, which means you have all kinds of additional advantages that attackers don't have. If you combine them with a higher than meet those level capability, which again, going back to the harness versus orchestration article I wrote, if you're thing that you wrote, your harness, your wrapper, whatever you want to call it, if it's only as good as your model, that's why I argue you have to build a better system, not build a thin wrapper around a highly capable model, because you'll only be as capable as that model is. So you need to build a system that can use that model's capability and then get exponentially better over time and be allow. And this all ties back to ultimately the AI SDLC, which is why I keep saying when I know how many different steps there are and different things to manage, and that's just in one thing, which is like a scanner pipeline. That doesn't include threat modeling and everything else, secure guardrails, all the other things that we do I could point to all day long. Point is there's like a million steps along the way of different things you can manage to be way more performant, way more impressive than a Mythos. And on top of that, you can have a system that like just in general finds things before they ever go out the door, right? Or can retroactively like very quickly respond if it, you know. Anyways, that's full circle. That's everything end to end in my view of the world is like this Mythos ready stuff is silly. It's just a low bar. Yes, it's not weird to me that AI could be pointed at like a human in a general place and be told some generalities and be able to like dig in and find things. I've been saying that, and you have been saying that, and everybody's, I think a lot of people have been saying this is the reality of the world we're living in. All of it requires really a better understanding of these systems, but also a better AI SDLC.
Yep. Yeah, it really does, right? Like the speed there, right? like, and you know, the arguments from this article, like, you can go and read it, like, we've posted it. And you know, mean time to exploit on, you know, any patch, right, or any CVE that's actually like pushed out the known exploited vulnerabilities, you know, the fact that 23% of them from 2026, right, is less than one day is incredible, right? Let's be honest. It didn't used to be that way. And that sort of timeline is coming at every open source project, every open source maintainer, in addition to every small and medium-sized business that's out there. And they are woefully unprepared for this. You and I both know this, and dealing with those companies, there's a long tail of companies that I keep saying it, that can't even spell AI yet. And, you know, they've been hearing about it, that it's coming, but they probably have one security guy, if any, and they're responsible from everything, from endpoint security, for everything from endpoint security to AppSec to firewalls to, you know, take your pick. So there's going to be some very serious consequences to those sorts of organizations for utilizing software that is basically unmaintained or is open source, or, you know, they just don't have the same response. Huge opportunities to help people, but there's a huge opportunity to get hurt across the landscape. And I don't know how else to talk about it besides SDLC and implementing an AI SDLC that is quick enough and responsive enough to mitigate when those controls actually pop up. Don't have a good answer there, right? Like, I mean,
I see. There's all kinds of different like things people are trying to do to stem the bleeding. Like, a lot of what I see right now is knee-jerk, but it's not bad. It's just knee-jerk, right? It's like, given the situation that we've all been put in, this is just like some of the things I've seen as like best responses. So runtime verification, you and I obviously talk quite a bit about that, but that's actually like a huge technique a hugely propagated and newer discussion point that's being, I mean, it's always been a discussion, but this is like really coming back in to the fold, which is like, if I have 1,000 bugs, and to everyone's point on everything you read about bugs being cheap now to find, which, by the way, yes and no on that. Yes and no on that, I would say, actually. Yes, it is getting cheaper for bugs, but whatever. But anyways, in order to like wade through that 1,000 bugs and find the 5 that actually matter, runtime verification, meaning validating that it's actually like an exploitable issue, and usually either authenticate, like unauthenticated anonymous gets highest priority, authenticated usually secondary priority. That tends to be the way that people are treating it now. And again, this isn't like, I don't think people are doing this for like a, I don't know if this is like a long-term thing. I think it's more just like, look, man, we've got way too many bugs. I need to know right now which ones matter. And to me right now, the ones that matter are the ones that are exploitable. I get it. Yeah. So that's the technique that I'm seeing.
Yep.
Reachability. That's also obviously another big one these days as well. Prioritizing which, especially on the SCA side, which are reachable. And the last one I'd say would be like what open source malware is doing, I think Socket has a feed or something. I don't know. There's a few companies that have threat intel feeds that are tracking, you know, malicious packages. So now there's new techniques for that even, which is like cool down periods. So now everyone's talking about cool down periods where, you know, you can't basically update, you're pinned to a version, you can't really update that version. So cool down periods, I don't know. I'm just seeing like all kinds of like reactionary things we're doing to keep up with malicious attacks within package management ecosystems, which is on the rise, to deal with libraries that have an increasing amount of CVEs And then to protect your actual web and network infrastructure from real attacks by people using whatever tools and models and crap they've chained together. So
yeah, there's multiple. I mean, he mentions a few of those in this, like the proactive protection of the protocol layer, right? Like, you know, so things like the, you know, the embargo on new packages until they've been vetted, right? Like that type of thing are in there. You know, he's also leaning into kind of runtime protection in that as well. So I think you're going to see a new generation of like web application firewalls and firewalls that are responsive, more responsive to actual attacks, right? And you're going to start to back LLMs in that as well. There's another article that I know we're not going to get to today. That is, I'll post it in there as well. But it was basically this comparison between, LLMs protection and attack at the same time, and actually using LLMs to slow down attacks based on weaknesses in LLM models as they're trying to exploit things and like giving back positive signals where positive signals don't exist. That's where I think like WAFs get really interesting from a protection perspective is, again, if you make the cost too high to actually attack something, most people will go to something else. And so there's strategies that you can implement in those products that will actually increase that cost, right? That's a different discussion point.
Yeah, we're seeing, I just want to add to that. Yes, I am seeing package firewalls. I'm seeing package proxies. And again, this is like the hard part of building a product too, is that, you know, you build for like what you know is like the right thing that everybody kind of needs, vanilla base case, like for whatever. But then people come and they're like, yeah, you cover all those bases, but I actually want XYZ. And XYZ these days is sort of like whatever the flavor of the month on the response and the knee-jerk reaction to this, like the new ways that these threats are manifesting, the velocity, the volume, the speed. And so it's like tough because you get all these calls and like, oh, do you have this? Do you have that? It's like, yeah, I need to see if like any of these are actually going to stick around. I'm not even sure if like these things long-term will stick around. Like there's so much change.
Yeah.
There's some level of, some things need to settle a bit before we put it this way. I understand that security always lags. Why do we lag? Well, it makes sense. We always lag because we have to create standards on top of standards. So web standards or RFCs or whatever gets created, frameworks, whatever it is, we always come in after the fact. That's sort of natural. That's sort of where it lives. And we place, you know, our controls where they need to be. We're still figuring that out. That's, I guess, like my kind of message for the day, I guess, with AI SDLC is like, nobody's really settled on any one thing. And that's from a functional perspective and an engineering perspective. So definitely security's still figuring it out, and we're still going to be figuring it out. And that might just be the theme of 2026. Hopefully in 2027, we get a picture.
I don't know, right? Like to Bobby's point about like security has never been great at strategy and it's coming to a head. And to your point about lagging and the lagging indicators, it always kind of comes back to this, who's creating that, right? And so you look at OpenAI's letter there, right? Like, yeah, like the principles there are probably sound, but there is an agenda that's associated with it. And this is what we've always struggled with. Who's actually sponsoring these things? Is it coming out of MITRE? Is it coming out of some organization that doesn't have at least some sort of iron in that fire or some sort of agenda that they're trying to push to actually create those standards or update those standards? I mean, even OWASP, we had that, you know, with what that 20 whatever list in 2014 or 2017, I can't even remember now, right? Like where the organizations that were putting together the OWASP top 10 had very not nefarious, but they were the list was very influenced by the organizations that were involved. And they had an agenda that they wanted to push because it equated to actual money for them. So I like, there's no one solution here.
This is the first time hearing about this.
Sorry. What?
I'm sorry. No, I couldn't help but make the joke. All right. Anyways, derailed you sufficiently.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Open solution to those five problems. Yeah. I like, we'll see what actually happens. But 2026 could be the discovery. We could speed that up. I mean, there are a lot more people focused on security in general, just at a lot of organizations. So there, you know, we could be at some sort of a tipping point. The problem again is the speed, right?
Speed, capabilities, you know, finding, like, think about this, man. If you're, I don't know, like, I'm going to throw out, like, I guess Nessus, like, you know, if you're using, like, I don't know if Nessus, maybe, like, I'm sorry, I'm using Nessus because Nessus was, like, an older network tool. But if you're, like, using, we'll say Nessus for vulnerability scans, and you're using some, like, some deterministic source code scanner and stuff like that, it's like, yeah, guess what? There's a lot of bugs you don't know about inside of your network architecture, your software, you know, software repositories. Like, there's a lot of problems that are hidden to you today. So, like, one thing that would be pretty easy is probably just, like, go fire up, like, rent some cheap compute and go fire it up and throw some AI at your systems, just to see, like, your highest priority systems, to see what... to see what's up. Because if you only have, like, the old school tools and you've never run them through even just basic stuff like, I don't know, Claude or whatever, you'd be surprised. You'll be very surprised.
Yes, you will be. All right. Well, good. We've been going for an hour. It's probably about time to call it for today. Appreciate the conversation as always, the comments, and the interactions. That's why we do this. Come find us online. Join us on Slack if you haven't yet. Again, as Ken said, info@absoluteappsec.com if you need an invite. And otherwise, I think we do have a guest coming on in a couple of weeks. We're going to get Mubix on as well. Rob Fuller here pretty soon. We got a few others that we're working through scheduling on. So other guests will be coming on, and, you know, the conversation will continue because it's happening faster than we can necessarily jump into. Yes. Thanks, Dario. Appreciate you listening. And, you know, if you want to throw us any tokens, that'd be much appreciated.
That's awesome. Thanks, Dario.
All right. Anything else, Ken? All right.
You guys are great. All right. Thanks for the laugh. Thanks for watching. Thanks for the laughs. American tokens only. All right.
Ciao.